It is the 18th of February, and we have a question. Okay, let's hear it.
Virgin Galactic.
I know. Is that unbelievable or what?
I need to know the tax consequences behind it. And also, if there's any lack, because right now you need to mention to me, I should not tax down to the
but you don't want taxes to be the tail that wags the dog, right? You're going to pay taxes, and he has a very valid point. If we're to sell right now, we've got 100% return in what, 3 weeks, 4 weeks. If we were to sell right now, we would have to pay taxes on that gain as if they were income, which is typically a lot higher. If we wait a year and a day, you have to wait a year and a day, and then you sell. Then you get at the capital gains tax rate, which is much, much lower. But if you really believe that, oh, these people are nuts, they're bidding up the price, you know, it's the next GoPro. And so you say, I want out. Oh, well, you know, you pay taxes on it. Taxes, you know, I hope all of you someday have this terrible affliction that you're paying so much taxes. I do. I really. I hope I have that problem. I hope all my clients have that problem. Because what does that mean? Yeah, you're making a lot of
paying
money.
It's painful.
Yeah, right.
Really painful.
It's painful to pay the taxes?
Yeah.
Well, just think of it. Just think of it.
Large amount.
Where would Southwestern College be without taxes? Do you think the $46 per credit union you pay actually goes to pay for our salaries? That barely pays the utility bills. Now, most of the money comes from the state. And it's all taxes. And think about people yell and scream about taxes. I can't stand taxes. And they put their hand over their heart when that aircraft carrier goes floating by. Do you know how much it costs to keep that thing floating at the dock, let alone taking it out to the Persian Gulf? So I know people complain about taxes, but taxes are the price we pay to live in a civilized society. Somebody a long time ago, a very smart person, said that. Any questions? Any thoughts? Any more questions? What?
How was Valentine's
Day? How was my Valentine's Day?
Yeah.
It was fine. Thank you very much. I have a Valentine, my wife. It'll be 32 years coming up.
Hey,
31 years.
Okay.
I think I remember. 32 years. Yeah. Anyway, we're doing pretty darn good. You guys are awesome. You guys are awesome. The only one, Berkshire, is kind of, but everybody else is, oh no, wait a minute. Wells Fargo.
Told you not to invest in that.
Why not? Banks are cool. How do you know a bank is making money? Their doors are open. Yeah, that's how you know a bank is making money. But
Actually, having a huge change in that industry again, internally.
Internally, they're changing. Yeah. Well, Wells Fargo is changing,
so,
just
all the banks.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, do you want to sell? Oh, it's up to 11,000 now. Do we sell? Do you sell Virgin Galactic?
No.
It's
going to be $100.
It's going to the moon.
Yes.
That was a joke. Okay. All right, good. All right, so let's stick with them. All right, so now what else? All right. Today is the club day. So today is the club day for all the clubs over on the Jaguar Walk. So we'll be there from noon to 1, right? Noon to 1 or is it quarter to 12 to 1? 11:45, yeah. So we'll be there. What do we do? What do we do in the investment club? Oh, it's gone. The investment club. What do we do in the investment club? Where is it? It's under here. This folks model. We basically do what we do here, but we have guest speakers come in and talk about their area of the investment industry, and then we ask them to explain to the students how they got their start in the business and what they can expect, you know, what kind of education you expect or experience you can expect to get. So we have some dynamite speakers. We already have two speakers lined up. We have one woman. She's coming. She says she's coming, but it's hard to get in touch with her secretary to get a date. But she's a wholesaler for the American Funds, one of my favorite companies, the Capital Group. And she's going to talk about mutual funds. We have somebody to talk about real estate next Thursday, not this Thursday. And the Thursday after that, insurance, 27th. And then the Thursday after that, real estate. And then I'll probably, if we don't get somebody by Thursday, I will. Yeah, do something for the follow-up on what we did last week, which is basically introduction to investments. Okay, all right, who's got a good joke?
You.
No, I only have bad jokes.
Yeah.
Nobody has a good joke? Did you hear about the alligator that walked into the bar?
Yes.
How about the bear?
Mm-hmm.
The mushroom?
Yep.
The neutron?
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, and the rhinoceros. Yeah. Heard about the, how about the duck?
No.
No. Nah, see, you didn't hear about the duck that walked into this bar. So this duck walks into a bar. Have you heard this one before?
Yeah.
No? Okay. And quack. He orders a beer. And the bartender says, sure, do you want me to put it on your bill?
He's
a duck, and he has a duck. I told you they'd get worse. They don't believe me. Okay, so here we are. We are ready to continue the types of mutual funds. And where were we? Like 38. No. We're a little farther than that. So we went through all these types, and over the weekend, right? Over the weekend, you studied all these, right? Nod your head yes. Please make me feel good. Nod your head yet. Study. You're going to study them again over this time because no more football, no baseball, no football, no anything. Okay, so we went through all these and we went from the most aggressive stock funds and discussed all those different types, then to bond funds, and then we ended with balance funds. And we said that balance funds are a very good deal for people who are terrified, who want to be able to eat well and sleep well, reasonably well. And a good balance fund will normally allocate 50, 50, 60, 40 bonds and stocks. And why is that? Because not always does this happen, but typically when stocks do really well, bonds sometimes do badly, or sometimes don't do much of anything. But when stocks do really poorly, often bonds shine at that time. And we'll discuss why more later. But as I said, they're a great option for people who are terrified and when you get older. Right now, I'm a lot older. And so my wife and I, have moved much, not all, but much of our investments towards the balanced fund world. However, there's the other, now, this is where we ended, right? We didn't get the asset allocation funds, I don't think. We barely touched on it. This is, again, it gets tricky. Asset allocation funds are often lumped in the balance category. However, they are different, very subtle difference. These asset allocation fund managers will more diligently try to fine-tune the allocation as market conditions change. Whereas a balance fund will usually stay about 60-40, 50-50. An asset allocation fund might try to move all your money into cash when they thought the stock market was going to fall and the bond market was going to fall, or they'll move everything into bonds and move everything to stocks. To me, that smacks of what is called market timing, and we're going to learn from a very smart investor of the mid-20th century, don't try to time the market. It can only be done by liars. Yes?
So the way you explained it, even, let's say, you see, like, let's say, a shaky move in the market, you move it to bonds, right? That transition, it is to consider a taxable event, right?
Oh, inside the fund, yes. For you, you don't see that.
Okay.
And inside the fund, they have to keep track of all this. This is their business. This is their job. If they sell a stock, say, they sell it at a capital gain, then they have to keep that capital gain on the books. And when the end of year, usually at the end of the year, they will then distribute all the capital gains. But if they have any losses, they can cancel that capital gain against any capital losses. If they earn dividends, that has to go into a separate account in their mind. You know, not you. You don't have to worry about it. And then those dividends have to be distributed. Usually, mutual funds will distribute their dividends quarterly. Some do it yearly. Some do it monthly. But typically quarterly. Okay? So then at the end of the year, you're going to get a 1099 that says you had so much capital gains or losses, you had so much distributions from dividends or interest if in the case of bond funds. Does that make sense? So taxes, yeah, you're not going to get away from taxes unless it's in a Roth IRA. You don't like Roth IRA? Oh, I love Roth IRAs.
Well,
yes.
Do you have it, but that's like all separate on the...
Okay.
Yeah. For my taxes, who should I go to, H&R Block or to my...
Well,
my
you want to go to H&R Blockheads?
I know you
Block, H&R Block. Come to Southwestern Community College and get your free taxes done for free.
I see. How about my financial advisor?
Well, financial advisors sometimes are tax preparers, but usually not. Mm-hmm. Usually they'll say, here, take this to your tax professional. But come, have you, you know about the free text preparation, right? Here on campus? What?
You're talking about the Vita, right?
Vita, 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 yeah, Vita.
Just do your tax returns.
Now, is that applicable for everyone?
Sorry?
They don't really do taxes, they just do tax returns.
Oh. What's the difference between taxes and tax returns?
Taxes, they don't. They need your W-2s.
Your right, you take your W-2s, take your 1099s that you get from the mutual fund company or the brokerage fund company, take them to the Vita, and they will do them for free. Unless there's a cutoff. If you're making $100,000, $200,000, they're going to say, get out of here. Yeah. And if you have a business, they don't do Schedule C.
You got me excited for a second. I'm like, what?
No, it's cool. I did it once when I was on sabbatical 5 years ago. I volunteered for the volunteer. We're taking a lot of fun. Told really bad jokes, and I would tell people, "We are worth every penny. You know, you're coming to the professionals, and we are worth every penny they pay us, which they don't pay us anything. So worth that." Shut up! Don't say that. Don't tell them that we're not worth anything. But it's free. What are you going to ask for free? Right? Questions, thoughts, ideas? Okay. So now, the last category, which we've already gone through, are the money market funds. We're going to put these lines because these are different right here. But this is the least riskiest. And we discussed these back in chapter one. Money market mutual funds are not guaranteed. Well, basically they are. General purpose, usually use treasury bills. Sometimes we'll do commercial paper. And then some are government securities only. They only do treasury bills. There's a reason for that. And if they're tax exempt, they are using municipal bonds, basically, with very short maturities to give you tax-exempt interest. They are essentially as safe as guaranteed money market accounts, since they invest in exactly the same securities, but they are not guaranteed. But if you're interested in the history of the money markets, go into any internet search engine and just type breaking the buck, and you will see thousands of articles about what happens when one of these guys loses a penny. They break the buck. Questions? Okay, so we've gone through the entire spectrum, and we've only highlighted the most important, in my humble opinion, categories, realizing that there are dozens and dozens of other categories, subcategories and the like. And here's what happens. And you remember, you're the investment guru now for your friends and family and coworkers, especially at that 401k meeting. And what do people do? They're in that 401k meeting, and they give them the brochure, or they go online, and they see that the aggressive growth fund has returned the best return over 30 years, and so that's where they put all their money. What do you tell them? Well, maybe not. It depends on how well you know them, right? You idiot from Philadelphia. You ever been to Philadelphia? I'm from Philadelphia. I'm from Philadelphia, and that's the way we treat each other. Ah, you idiot. Everybody in Philadelphia has a good friend. Do you know the difference between a friend and a good friend?
Yeah?
Yeah? Tell me.
A good friend would, steer you in the right way, while a regular friend wouldn't really care.
Yeah, it's very close. He's very close. A friend will help you move, but a good friend will help you move a body. Everybody in Philadelphia has a good friend. Anyway, what you want to tell them is, hey, you better be emotionally prepared. Because when the market tanks, what's going to happen to that aggressive growth fund? It's going to lose 50, 60, 70%. Not good. So what do? They've lost 60%. What do? They ask, where can I put my money so I won't lose any money? And what do they tell them?
Bonds.
No, even further, money market. Because you can still lose money in bonds. We're going to see, sometimes you do. So what does he do? He takes everything out at the bottom of the market, moves it over to the money market, and then what happens?
He makes only a fraction amount.
He makes a fraction of a percent, and the market jumps back up. So, is it too late to get in? He takes everything out of the money market and moves it back into the aggressive growth fund just to watch the market fall another 20%. You see what's going on here?
Yes.
Emotions are so powerful. We are so frightened by losses that we react in a way that is very bad for our long-term investing ability. And it's going to happen to you, folks. There's no doubt that it's going to happen. I don't know when. I don't know. What people say, is there going to be a crash? I say, yeah. And they say, oh, what should we do? I say, nothing. We don't know when it's going to happen. We just know it's going to happen. That's it. So if that crash happens and you keep putting money away, you're buying low. Are you with me? Dollar cost averaging. Horrible name, but very powerful technique. The same thing happens on the other side. You'll hear somebody who's very frightened. And they say, well, where can I put my money that I won't lose any money? And the 401k goofball with the will say, well, our stable value fund, or it's basically a money market, will make sure that you don't lose any money, but they won't gain very much. And if they're young, should they really put all their money over here?
Nope.
No, not really. No, because they're giving up all that opportunity cost that we discussed. Cool? So you're going to study these and know that scramble sheet from by heart, right?
Yep.
Make me feel good. Say yes.
Yes.
Okay, good. Excellent. Now, let's continue with some other odds and ends that we have to take care of. There are mutual funds that just invest in mutual funds. What? You knew it had to happen, right? No, they're not kidding. It's serious. This is good. Why? Because what these do, they're sometimes called lifestyle funds, target date funds, retirement funds, college funds. They look at your time horizon. They say, oh, you want the retirement 2050 fund. That means you're not going to retire for another 30 years, right? I got that right, 50 minus 20. Means you're going to be working for another 30 years. So what we're going to do is we're going to take that retirement 2050 fund and we're going to put mostly stocks in there, but we'll also put some bonds. And this is the problem I have with them. They tend to be too conservative, in my humble opinion. Not that much more conservative than a lot of people, but they tend to be more conservative than I believe they should be. If you're in your 20s, forget bonds. In my humble opinion, stick with a growth and income, maybe a little bit of spice. You don't even need equity income. Stick with growth and income because history tells us that that's a very good choice. So the company populates the mutual funds with other mutual funds to match your time horizon, and usually from the same companies off choices. And then as you get closer and closer and closer to that date, whether it's for college or for retirement, they move you closer and closer to further and further away from stocks and closer to bonds and money market. Make sense? And what's really cool about these is the Congress said, look, Mr. and Mrs. Employer, if you put people automatically into a 401k when they start up, it's called, you have to opt out. You don't have to opt in. You have, basically, they're going to, by default, start taking 3 or 5% of your salary and sending it to your 401k, your 403b, your TSP, thrift savings plan. And if they do that and choose an appropriate time horizon for you, because they know your birthday, then you can't sue them. Are you with me? Normally, if you go to a financial advisor and they give you really bad advice, you can sue them. And you say, you shouldn't have put me all my money in the aggressive growth fund. I'm 83 years old. Really dumb mistake, right? That person needs to be, they need to leave the industry because that's a really stupid thing to do. But normally, you can sue people if they give you bad advice. Well, the Congress said, okay, Mr. and Mrs. Employer, that however big you are, 403Bs, simple IRAs, TSPs, 401Ks, as long as you choose the appropriate time horizon for this individual, they have no recourse to sue you. Did you have a question?
Is that applicable to 403B as well?
Yeah.
Okay.
403Bs, what is the difference? Okay. What, they're just, first of all, stupid name. They come from the Internal Revenue Code provision, 401K, for the parentheses, and it says if the employer does this and you, the employee, do this, then domini, domini, sanctus, you don't have to pay taxes on the contributions, nor do you have to pay any taxes on the yearly gains until you go to take the money out. If you use the Roth provision, and we'll discuss these at the end of the semester, basically, but if you're interested, come see me. I mean, not that big a deal. If you use the Roth provision and you wait until retirement, no taxes on your contributions. Very, very cool. Or the earnings from your contributions.
What percentage of keep or keeping their, once they retire, keeping onto one of the aggressive ones, let's say cash flow.
You know, I don't know, but I certainly hope that they move some of their money, especially depending on how, it depends how savvy they are, because now, it used to be that people retired at 62 and they died at 64. Or they didn't make it. They were going to retire at 65 and they died at 64. But now people are living to 94. And your generation should easily, de facto, make it to 100. So they need to have some growth in there, even when they're in their 60s, into their 70s. But really, they should be moving more over here. Yes, Andrew.
It said that in my generation, one of my better generation, Generation Z, is going to live up to 150.
The first, so I have a hard time believing this. But the first person to live to 150 supposedly has already been born.
Yeah, supposedly, you know.
Okay, we'll see. Well, I won't see it, but you'll see it. So we'll see what happens.
Chances are I might live over 100 years.
Yeah. The now we also know that, you know, got to exercise. We're finding out that meat is not the best thing for you to eat, dear students. I know you love. I like HODADs too, but you don't smoke. Weight, keep your weight down, and these are things that will increase your longevity. No guarantees, because you can get kissed by a bus tomorrow when it's game over. Yes.
What can I do to have money while I'm retired?
That's what we're talking about here. You're going to put money in your 401k. You're going to put money in your Roth IRA. You're going to put money in a regular account, and then you're going to.
Would the money be there after 4 years of my retirement?
I certainly hope so. Yeah, as long as you don't panic. Don't panic when the markets fall.
Yeah.
And if the world ends, you see, all bets are off. There's a great, very wise man said, don't bet on the end of the world because you can't collect. You understand?
Yeah.
You cannot collect if the world ends. Oh, well, you know, you're going to be worried about, you know, what we're going to eat tonight. I hear moth soup is actually pretty good. Have you ever tried it? Moth soup.
Moth soup.
Moth soup. Crickets? I love crickets. Chapulines? No, I'm serious. Oh, yeah. Go down to Oaxaca. Oaxaca in Mexico. Oh, they're delicious. Not the big ones. The big ones are kind of mealy, but the tiny ones.
Were they alive?
No, they're not alive.
Are they crispy?
Yes, they're crispy. They're very good. I hope so. Yeah. They might increase my longevity. Oh, no, no. They're good protein. Bugs are good for you. Yeah, they're good. Type in Chapulines. Chapulines, Oaxaca. They make this pizza. It's not really pizza. It's called Telayuda. You can get it down at TJ now. Oh, they're delicious. They make this pizza. It looks like a pizza, but it's a Mexican pizza, basically. And you can get them in TJ. There's a restaurant in TJ called La Casa de la Telayuda. And it's from Oaxaca. And they sprinkle on the Chapulines, and it is absolutely delicious. Okay, enough of that. Okay, you with me? All right, let's go. Now, did we get here yet? We didn't get here yet. Specialty funds. Folks, there are dozens and dozens of types of funds. Just the ones we learned are the most important ones, are the ones I want you to memorize. But there are dozens of these things. Hedge funds are not mutual funds. They are lumped in with mutual funds, but legally they're a totally different world. Stay away from these things. You'll hear about the star hedge fund manager has just done 30%, Mr. Soros, and all these other people. But stay away from these things. They typically were traditionally only open to sophisticated investors, which means you could lose $100,000 and it wouldn't be the end of the world for you. You wouldn't enjoy it. But now you can get them with as little as $5,000 or $10,000. There is no regulatory oversight. In other words, if they wanted to put every single dime that they received into one stock, there's nothing to stop them. Are you with me? They can do very exotic and dangerous things called shorting and margin, buying on margin. We do not like these. But if you're so inclined and you want to roll the dice, good luck. Bear funds try to make money when the market goes down. And this is an issue. This is an issue. Yeah, sometimes the market goes down, but more often it goes up. So bear funds, I'm not a big fan of these. We're going to learn more about precious metals, gold, and the like. And you can buy funds that invest in these hard assets. Not that great. Real estate investment trusts. If you want to own real estate and you don't want to be a landlord, REITs, real estate investment trusts, are a great way to do it. The problem with mutual funds that just invest in real estate is that there's not that many REITs. So you don't really get a broad diversification. But hey, you want real estate? There you go. And then there are just dozens of these boutique, exotic funds. What do you think the stock car stocks funds invest in? Close. Not the cars themselves. NASCAR. I have a hard time believing this, but the most popular spectator sport in the United States is not football. It's not baseball. It's NASCAR. Every Sunday, 200,000 people go out to the track to watch people go around and around and around at 200 miles an hour. You're smiling. Are you from the South? No, okay. Well, these people are insane about NASCAR. And so what this company does, if Folgers is the official coffee of NASCAR, that's what they buy. They buy Folgers. If Nike is the official, you see the NASCAR, they got the advertising all over them. How about the Paws Tombstone Fund? What do you think they invest in? Paws is the name of the company, Tombstone's the name of the fund. Not pizza. Tombstone, what? Cemeteries and mortuaries and caskets and because, well, everybody gonna die, right? And thankfully so did the Paul's Tombstone Fund. And now you cannot make this stuff up. Fact is always crazier than fiction. Somebody created the Chicken Little Growth Fund for people who were afraid that the look. If you don't believe me, just look it up. There's another one called the Timothy Fund for good Christians because of St. Paul's letter to Timothy about how you should be a good steward of your resources. There's a fund for Muslims because Muslims...
So, can I make up my own fund?
Sure!
Sure.
Can
it just be like legit and all that?
Well, I don't know about that.
Because I can make something way better than that.
Okay, try it. You need some capital, which means a lot of money. Right. You need the money. Well, I would move to L.A., Boston, New York. Well, they're both big places. I don't know about Miami. A lot of mutual fund companies are based in Boston. The biggest is actually based outside Philadelphia. That's Vanguard. But then Capital, which runs the American Group, they're in L.A., and they're really good. They're a great group. PIMCO's in Newport Beach if you want to live the high life. Newport Beach is nice. Okay, so look them up. If you don't believe me, look them up. There's some really weirdos out there. Now, let us know. Go ahead.
Speaking of REITs.
Real Estate Investment Trust.
So now, is it recommended, let's say you have actual property, and rental income, right? The capital gain from the rental income, like the profits, would it be recommended to... the money instead of spending and moving to the market or allocating on the platform?
Well, it depends. Often when people buy real estate, they tend to stick with it because of the, as you say, you're going to have to have the taxes. So what you can do, and Sergio Palomino, not next Thursday, but the Thursday after that, he's coming, and he'll talk about what's called 1031 exchanges. So if you own a piece of property and you want to buy a bigger piece of property, what you can do is you can sell that property, and as long as you buy a property that's, I think, $1 more, it just has to be $1 more, that costs more than that other property, you can do what's called a 1031 exchange. I'm assuming it comes from the tax code. You then move the capital gains onto the next property and basically let them continue on the second property. And what happens often is they don't bother selling. They just keep it. And then when you pass away, your heirs get they don't have to pay the capital gains taxes. They get what's called the step-up allowance. It's pretty cool. And that's what? When is that talk? It'll be March 5th. No. Not this Thursday, not next Thursday, but the Thursday after that.
What about the current rental income?
The rental income is taxed as income.
But it would be recommended to just toss it into...
Oh, what you do with your proceeds?
Yeah, the proceeds.
Well, that's up to you. I'm sorry. I didn't understand. I'm sorry. What you do with the proceeds? Well, you can invest it in the market, in stocks, bonds, mutual funds, that maybe REITs, or you can live off of it, or you could basically buy another property.
As you mentioned, put it in an IRA. That would be...
I would not put property into an IRA. It can be done.
I mean, to reduce some of the tax.
Yeah, but it's no. We don't. We're getting off topic here. But you can put property into an IRA or a Roth IRA. It can be done. Don't do it. I know somebody who's done it, but that guy, he's got a lot of money. He doesn't have to worry about it because there are potential problems if you put property in an IRA. Serious potential problems. Serious. Yeah. Later. Ask me later. Okay. No, I'm serious. I'll tell you later because I don't. We're on mutual funds now. Okay. So now, the current brouhaha that's going on in the industry is whether you should invest passively with index funds or use active management. As we saw, active management still has far more mutual funds, far more money under its guidance. But the current drumbeat now is that, you should only go with low-cost index funds. Because index funds buy and hold a portfolio of stocks or bonds equivalent to those in some specific market index. And what is that? It's just a list of stocks or bonds, list of bonds. And so the passive manager doesn't do any active research. They don't go knock on the door of GM or knock on the door of Ford. They just say, GM's in the Standard & Poor's 500, list of 500 biggest companies in the United States, buy it. Ford, yes. How about some other podunk company? No, don't buy it. And we said that they can offer much lower annual fees. Be careful. Sometimes the insurance companies will try to sneak a high-cost index fund in your 401k. But what happens is many actively managed funds don't beat the market. Well, think about it. If you're charging 1% a year, you have to beat the market by at least 1% just to break even. If you're charging 2%, you got to beat the market by 2%. That is not easy to do. So many actively managed funds do not beat the market. Because of the annual fee, which is often almost negligible, the index funds cannot actually match the market's performance. As we saw last week, we saw that the Vanguard Index 500 didn't actually match the S&P, but it comes pretty darn close. Whereas an actively managed fund could substantially outperform. We saw the AB Large Cap Growth Fund outperform the market, and then we saw the Legg Mason Value Trust drastically underperform the market. Are you with me? Understand? Make sure questions on index funds, because you're going to get this question from people. You should only buy an index fund.
Yeah, what's up with that, by the way?
Well, as I said, these people believe that the rationale, here it is, the rationale for index funds came from research done in the late 1960s, early 1970s. And if you read that book, A Random Walk Down Wall Street, that professor, he was one of these people, that statistically showed that many of the actively managed funds did not beat the market. In fact, many of them didn't do as well as a monkey throwing darts at a dartboard and saying, hey, buy that company. They didn't even do as well as people just randomly choosing stocks. However, many actively managed funds do beat their respective indices over time. And so my advice, and this is what I do, and again, everybody's different, is to look for a fund family where most all of their funds have consistently beaten the respective index over decades. Not just 1 year, 3 year, 5 years, or even 10 years, because the last 10 years have been very unusual in the marketplace. So in the late 1990s, and I think now we're going to see what happens, we'll see what happens when the organic matter hits the Ventolin device, but index funds have become a victim of their own success.
So this, have I asked this question? The theory of index funds collapse on itself.
Well, that's what many people are predicting, and that's what happened in the late 1990s. So let's continue. The Standard & Poor's 500 is the most popular one. That's the one we looked at last week. The S&P 500, the Dow Jones Industrial Average, the Dow. We're going to learn about these in detail in Chapter 5. You don't have to memorize them now. But when you're going through your assignment for Chapter 4, you're going to see that various of these five funds you're going to look at, four of them follow some of these indices. The Dow Jones Wilshire 5000, which used to be called the Wilshire 5000, now it's called the U.S. Total Stock Market Index, Dow Jones. Is that a handful? The NASDAQ Composite is the tech index. The MSCI Global and IFA Index. Again, don't worry about, you don't have to worry about these guys. We're going to go in detail about these in the next chapter. Index, but there are countless indices, countless index funds available. Index funds are the current perfect investment. For the fail-safe superlative treatment, visit these guys, but they're not the only one. IFA.com, index fund advisors. Oh, you should never go with a actively managed fund. But what are the downsides? The downside is that it's passively managed. And what does that mean? That means the manager has no human judgment allowed. There is no space for you to say, you know, I don't care how good a company that is. It's way overpriced. But as a company becomes larger and larger and larger in this galactic, you know, virgin galactic, the index fund manager must buy more of that company. Why? Because these market indices say, the larger the company, the more weight it has in the index. So if a company continues to get bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger in terms of market size, and people keep bidding up the price and price and price, the index fund must buy more. Whereas an actively manager can say, look, that's a great company, I think it's fabulous, but it's way overpriced. I am not going to buy. In fact, I'm going to sell. The index fund manager can't do that. So you see what happens? The bubble gets it's a feedback mechanism. Anybody knows about engineering and feedback mechanisms. The more expensive the stock becomes, the more the index fund manager has to buy it, which makes the stock price go up, which means the index fund manager has to buy it more of it. And people keep throwing more money into these index funds. And the same thing happens on the way down. If a company is hit on hard times, for instance, what's happened lately with Boeing. Boeing is one of the most technologically advanced companies in the universe. And yet they made some boneheaded maneuvers, and the stock price has been beaten down. So what does the index fund manager have to do? They have to sell. They have to trim their holdings. Whereas an active manager can say, you know what? No, 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 no. This is a great company. The market doesn't see that they're going to come back. They've got to come back. Maybe not. We'll see with Boeing. You realize if you ordered a plane from Boeing today, you wouldn't get it for 8 or 9 years. Airbus is almost as bad. So that's how much business they have, that they can't fulfill the orders for at least 8-9 years. People usually think, the airlines are usually thinking ahead that far, so it's not a big deal. So here's what happens. Now, this slide, we're going to come back to it, because you don't know what PE is yet. PE.
I know what PE is.
Physical education.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is. Price to earnings ratio.
That's right.
We'll discuss price to earnings ratio in Chapter 5 in detail. But just know for now, the higher the PE, the riskier the investment. And so you thought in the late 1980s that you were getting a broadly diversified index of international stocks, Canada, Australia, Far East, Western Europe, Singapore, Japan. What happened? In the late 1980s, Japan's stock market just levitated, just exploded upward. And at the end of the decade, Japan made up 60% of the IFA, Europe, Australia, and the Far East. It made up 60% of Canada, Asia, who else? I'm forgetting somebody. Western Europe, Hong Kong, Singapore, and Japan. Okay, so you thought you were getting broad diversification, but you're getting 60% Japanese stocks with a sky-high PE and everybody else. Canada, Singapore, Australia, Western Europe, France, Germany, England, was 40% with a much more reasonable PE. What happened? The next several years, Japan's value went from 38,000, I think, down to 8,000. Japan just, the bubble burst. The same thing happened at the end of the 1990s. The internet stocks, the telemedia stocks, the telecommunication stocks just levitated to outrageous amounts. And so at the end of, well, actually the beginning, March of 2000, at the end of the decade, the S&P 500, which includes the 500 largest companies in the United States, and, you know, including railroads and energy companies and material companies and healthcare and all the other companies, they were worth 66%, and the tech was worth 33%, one-third, with a PE that was even higher than Japan. And the tech sector then went on to lose 80, 90% of its value over the next 2.5 years. So you see what's going on here? We're going to come back to this slide later on. But don't let anybody tell you that index funds are perfect. There is no such thing as a perfect investment. Every investment has advantages and disadvantages. And what I'm seeing now is I'm thinking these index funds, they're, especially the S&P 500, because people just keep putting more money and more money in. Yes, Raven?
For the PE, what's the highest it will go?
What's the highest the PE will go?
I have one at 93.07. You're scaring that
I'm crowd. Sorry, who?
I have one that's at 93.07.
You should be scared.
Yeah. That's
the parachutes had better be very large. Well, during the tech bubble of the late 90s, I looked down at the Quotron machine. You don't see Quotrons anymore. I looked down at the Quotron machine in the office, and eBay had a PE of 10,000. And I thought, this ain't going to last. I don't know when it's going to fall, but it's going to fall. eBay's still around, but it lost like 90% of its value. But it came back.
It can go up to 100.
It can go up to infinity, I guess. You know, it can't go up to infinity. But it can go up huge amount. And realize that you're taking on major risk. But we'll discuss it in detail later on. Okay, now, exchange-traded funds. How are we doing for time? Not bad. Exchange-traded funds are open-end mutual funds that trade like a stock, as does a closed-end fund, but there's no limit on the number of shares. And what happened is these started out like index funds in that they're passively managed, but you didn't have to deal with the mutual fund company. You went through your brokerage firm. Most all ETFs are still passively managed, but now there are some that are actively managed. So some of the ETFs are saying, well, you know what? You don't have to do passive managed. We'll actively manage your fund for you. But the cool part about ETFs is they have great names like Spider and Diamond and Cube. Spider, S&P 500, Diamond, Dow Jones Industrial Average, Cube, the NASDAQ. The symbol for it is Cube, 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 so Cube. Is that cool? Am I losing you? Yes, Stephen.
So do we need to know PE stuff?
No, you don't need to know any about PE. All you need to know right now, you don't even need to know that. We'll discuss it when we get to Chapter 5 in detail, is that the higher the PE, the riskier the investment. No, not in the first test. Oh, why did I didn't talk about it? Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Thank you. Exam number one is next Tuesday. Ah, I'm sorry. Exam number one. You okay?
Yeah.
A walrus? Somebody let it go loose. So we'll talk about that at the end of the class. My apologies. I forgot to announce that. I told myself to announce it. I forgot. Okay. Let's continue. All right. Socially responsible funds. We're hearing more about this. You'll see ESG, environmental, social, and governance. These are funds that are actively managed and directly incorporate ethics and morality into the investment decisions. So if you are morally opposed to alcohol or tobacco, and some of these funds have been around for decades, there's one that's been around since 1950 and 1952 that have not invested in alcohol or tobacco. But then in the 1970s, they moved to companies that don't pollute or build weapons or nuclear power plants, destroy the rainforest, and then moved to companies that exploit labor. It's surprising that any companies are left. But suppose, you know, silliness aside, these have done actually pretty well. Why? Because they're mostly invested in tech companies, because they're mostly the most environmentally friendly companies around. And tech companies have done well the last 30 years. So we have socially responsible funds. You'll see ESG, environmental, social, and governance, whatever. And because of the backlash to socially responsible funds, we now have socially irresponsible funds. There is a mutual fund. I know. He wants to invest in this one. It's called the Vice Fund. And you guessed it. It invests in tobacco and alcohol, Philip Morris, Siggy's, and other corporate nasties, gambling and defense firm. It's a small fund with high annual fees, but it's actually done pretty well. So check out vicefund.com.
That's interesting. Would you recommend it?
No, I wouldn't recommend it. No, I wouldn't.
Will you say we have this conscious capitalism?
Conscious capitalism?
Yeah.
Does that mean it's aware?
Yeah.
Conscious or unconscious capitalism? Yeah. In other words, we have to deal with some of our issues. We will. I think we will, or we won't. And then I'll meet you at the beach while the world burns. Okay. Here is from the Wall Street Journal just a list, and this is not even the whole list. All the different types of funds. Am I going to ask you to memorize all these? No. But the ones on the board, the ones in your scramble sheet, they're the ones that you have to know. Morningstar is a company that you may use for your Chapter 4 assignment. They analyze mutual funds. Now they do stocks, too. They designed this style box. And I think it was probably one of the reasons why we had so many funds in the 1990s is because they said, people would say, well, Morningstar says I should have a fund for each one of these blocks. That I should have a value large cap company, a value small cap company, and a value medium cap company. And so all the companies said, okay, let's make a fund for each one of these boxes. I don't know anybody who actually uses these style boxes. And now they have this, they've made it better, they say. They call it ownership zones. So instead of a box, it just has a little oval. So you check it out if you're so inclined. I don't use it. I think it's against what we should do. We're trying to be mostly diversified, not pigeonhole our investments in any one category. Good. Okay, so everybody stretch. Are we doing great? Okay. So you're going to study all these, right? Nod your head yes. Now, a family of funds exists when one investment company matches a group of mutual funds. Before the 1960s and 70s, most funds had one or two funds. Most companies had one or two funds, maybe a few. Or just one or two. But as the industry grew, we got these companies with huge offerings. And so they call them fund families. The biggest for decades was Fidelity, but now it's Vanguard. You can move your money from one fund to another almost always with no charge. But if the fund is in a taxable account, you're going to generate a taxable transaction. But again, we don't want taxes to wag the dog. You pay your taxes. If it's in a retirement account, 401k, Roth IRA, and the like, there's no taxes until you pull the money out. And if it's Roth, there's no taxes when you pull the money out, as long as you wait until retirement. But what happened is some people use this ability to move their funds back and forth. We talked about that last week, the scandals in the mutual fund industry. So if you do that, some companies are like, sure, you can move it all you want. We'll charge you 2% every time you do it, if it's in within a certain period of time, 30 days or 60 days. Or other companies say, no, you can't do it. You moved it from one fund to another, you have to stay there for 60 days or 30 days. So don't do that. Mutual funds are not for trading. People use ETFs for trading because then it doesn't matter. They're traded like a stock. It was done to discourage that market timing by investors. And Forbes said this, which I think is a very good piece of advice. You know, it's not really profound, but it's very good. Choose a family, not a fund. Make sure the family you have that you're interested in has all the mutual fund choices you need, and they've done consistently well over decades. And here they are the last 10. Now, getting this information is a little difficult because different entities measure differently. For example, BlackRock is actually the largest money manager in the world. They have some like $5 or $6 trillion, but they only have about $1.8 trillion in mutual funds. And they have pushed out, these two guys were usually two and three, moving back and forth. But BlackRock, because they've gotten so popular with their ETFs, and they also have the TSP. Anybody? I just told you one of the answers to Chapter 4 assignment. Yeah, you have the TSP? Yeah, they also run the TSP. So Vanguard's the biggest. Fidelity, as we said, was the biggest for many decades. American Funds, Capital Group, State Street, Global Advisors. This company, again, on the back of their ETFs, has moved into the top 10. But what State Street will do for you, Stephen, is if you're a mutual fund, you need to have a distributor. You need to have accounting. You need to have the transfer agent. They'll do all that work for you. You can contract all that work out, and you just manage the money. You're the investment advisor. So that's why it's easy to start up a mutual fund. But you still need some serious cash. T. Rowe Price, Baltimore, very good company. Invesco, that used to be, they bought Oppenheimer, and they got bigger. They used to be a little bit smaller, but now they're in the top 10 because they bought Oppenheimer. This company is very popular with advisor, defensional fund advisor. There's the one that's based in PIMCO. They're the one that's based in Newport Beach. And then Franklin Templeton, an excellent company that used to be up here, but they've been losing investors lately.
Why?
Again, it's that investment theory that only you should invest in passively managed funds. And so the active managers have been losing money. But some of them are doing very well. Okay, so now what we're going to do is we're going to take a look at, questions, thoughts? Okay, let's take a look at, where was that? That's number 63, so remember that. Who do we got here? Not that guy. Where's, what happened to, maybe he's over here. Ahaha. What happened to, oh, I know what I was going to do. I know what I was going to do. So when you're doing the assignment, you'll notice that there, here's the website, you'll notice that there are some offerings from sample mutual fund companies. And so let's take a look at what Fidelity has. What did I do with Fidelity? There's Fidelity. There it is. Okay. Well, to take a look at what Fidelity had, this is old. This is 10 years old. It doesn't have, some of the funds have gone, some of them are new, but when you go on the website, I want to go here, you'll see that here are offerings from the funds. Now, they don't publish them anymore on paper anymore. Well, American still does, but all of them now do it online. They just say go to our website. So we're going to take a look at Fidelity funds right here. The first click is just show us the Fidelity funds that are available through you. Let's make this a little bigger. So Fidelity funds, it shows the 310 or so, changes all the time, is it still 310? 309, they got it. Shows you the 309 mutual funds that you can buy through Fidelity, right? However, Fidelity's not stupid. They are a very sharp company. What they did is they went to all the other mutual fund companies and said, hey, would you let us sell your mutual funds through us? And you can buy over 10,000 mutual funds on Fidelity's, if you get a Fidelity account. Where do you even start? That's the toughest part about mutual funds. Where do you start? So let's take a look at that. Here it is. This is a list from 2009. But all of these are mutual funds. And what Fidelity does is they go from the riskiest to the least riskiest. Okay? So let's start. Right here. Blue chip value. Equity income 2, large cap value, 130/30 large cap, disciplined equity, dividend growth, Fidelity fund, growth and income portfolio, mega cap stock, stock selector, tax management stock, trend, value discovery, blue chip growth, capital appreciation, contra fund, a very good fund, by the way, exporter and multinational, Fidelity 50, focus growth company, growth discovery, independence, large cap growth, large cap stock, Magellan, OTC portfolio, mid cap value, leveraged company stock, low price stock, value strategies, mid cap growth, there's 9 more pages. 8 more pages, 9 pages in total. Which one do you want? The one I recommend? Contra fund? Well, you know, the problem with contra fund is that he's getting older. Type in contra fund, Will Danoff. Brilliant man. Will Danoff, yeah. No.
That's his name.
Will Danoff. No.
Do we know
Peter Lynch doesn't work for Fidelity anymore. But if you called up Fidelity and you ask, which stock should I go with? They'll go, oh, we got somebody. They don't want to tell you. Because as soon as they do, first of all, they have to be licensed. And they now have a fiduciary interest. They can get sued if you give them the wrong recommendation. So which one? You want a Fidelity fund? Which one do you want? You see what you're up against? Yeah, you really have to do your research. And the problem is you can't research all 309 plus all the other 10,000 mutual funds that Fidelity has. Now, here is Vanguard. This is old. How do I get rid of this guy? Oh, I can't. Forget it. But they go, if you go to Vanguard's website, and it went by itself, they start from the least riskiest. They go from there and then go up the stock. So there's the money market. See, there's their treasury money market fund, and then they have tax-exempt money market funds that invest only in municipal securities. Then there's state-specific. If you buy a California tax-exempt mutual fund, you won't pay any federal taxes. Well, you never pay federal taxes on mutual funds, on money market mutual funds that invest in municipals. But you also don't pay any California income tax, because California says, oh, you're a California resident? Fine. Then the bond funds, then there's the lifestyle funds, right, 2050, target date 2050, stock funds, there's their index fund, and then all the way down to their very small cap index funds, which are much more aggressive, and they stick global over here. Cool? Now, where was the balance? Here's the balance. Notice. Look at the difference. They have a balanced index fund, and they have an asset allocation fund. So do you see the subtle difference? Do you remember the difference? The balance fund is going to try to stay 60, 40, 50, 50, whereas the asset allocation fund, we have to do more research, but just from its name, to me, it says, oh, these managers are going to more likely try to fine-tune the investments and have more stocks when they think the stock market's going to do well, maybe no bonds or a little bit of bonds, and vice versa. Or no bonds and stocks. They want to get rid of everything. Any questions? Any thoughts? Sip from the fire hose? Right. That's what it feels like. It feels like, I don't know. Now, let's take a look at American. And what I like about American, they fit on one page. So here's, they also call them Capital Group. Can you see that? Mm-hmm. I don't know if you can see that. Can you see that? Let's get the lights off. I want to fit everything on one page. Okay, now you can really go to sleep. Let me turn the light down. Okay. Can you guys see that? You guys got good eyes? They don't have aggressive growth. They started growth. They have aggressive growth, but it's for only private investors. They don't want you, retail investors, to have aggressive growth. But notice the returns that they've had over their lifetime. Where is it? I can't see where. There it is. Lifetime. 11. There's one. 10. 13. 10. And that's from 1973. 1999, 7, because the last 20 years have been kind of rough, especially for outside the world. 11, that guy's only been around for a little while. 12, there's the investment company America that we looked at. And then there's the equity income funds. Notice that they have 8.5. This one's actually done pretty well, 10. There's the balance fund, 10. That's why I love this one. American Balance Fund has been around since 1937 in one form or another. And they have no business. A balanced fund has no business doing 10%. If you get 7%, 8% from a balanced fund, congratulations, shake your hand, you're doing really well. And then we move down to the bond funds, and notice now the returns. Forget these are new. But the returns are much lower from bond funds, and that's what you expect, right? Less risk, less return. Then there's the tax exempt, which are even lower because of the ability to give you tax-exempt interest, and then the money market fund, which is barely paying anything. But they're going up a little bit, money market funds. Thoughts? Ideas? Questions? Is it a sip from the fire hose? Am I going too fast?
So do you invest in like money markets, or do you go for the big board?
For now, I don't have any money market, but I'm not going to touch the money for a little while. And even when I do, when we start taking the money out, I'll probably keep it more in balance. I'm involved with it. I know I've lived through 2000 to 2002, 2008 and 2009, and I didn't panic. So if I'm getting older, I already am old. So we got a lot of money in here. My wife and I now have a lot of money in here. I still have some of these guys up here. I still have some spice. Still have some growth in income. Mm-hmm. But I have no bond funds. I don't have any. I should. You know, by this time, I'm 62. By this time, somebody in their 60s is supposed to have a lot of bonds. But I think they're ridiculous. They're way too pricey. Stocks are also pricey. I'd rather have the stocks.
You said in our 20s we should focus on growth.
Yeah, I would start. It depends. Everyone's different. But I usually start people right here. I usually start people in the growth and income category. And then after the market dumps 20%, I say, how'd you do? And if they say, I didn't even look at it. Oh, yeah. Okay, let's give them a growth fund. Let's give them some spice, right? But if they said, oh man, I lost $100, okay, I'm going to move you down here. You think it's emotions. Emotions are... Now, everything looks good, doesn't it? All right, wait a minute. What happens when the organic matter hits the Ventolin device? Here is it's the one right after 2008. Let's make it bigger. Can you see that? Minus 41, 44, minus 49. But notice The growth and income funds didn't do as badly as the growth funds. And then we get down to equity income. Notice. So here, your $10,000 became $4,800.
Damn.
Your $10,000 became $7,800. Mm-hmm. $6,800. I'm sorry, $6,800.
So you lose money?
Yeah, you lost money. That was 2008. And then the balance fund lost 30%, so your $10,000 became $7,000. But notice, the bond funds went down. That's highly unusual. Usually when the stock market crashes, the bonds go up. But everybody fell down in 2008. So look at the junk bond fund, the high income trust. They lost 30, just like the balance fund. But then the bond fund, the corporate bond fund, lost 15. The world bond fund only lost 4. The intermediate lost 4 because it's less risky. The short term lost 1.4, so very little. It's like a money market. But notice what happened to the government securities, the treasury bond funds. Why? When the organic matter hits the Ventolin device and people believe that the world's going to end, they pull out money out of their other investments, throw them into treasuries, because that's the flight to safety, flight to quality. Because the United States government is not going anywhere. I don't care what people say on the right-wing radio. We're going to be around. And then even the muni bonds fell. People were so afraid that and it's a few cities went bankrupt. Stockton, who else? Detroit. Was San Bernardino one of them? But a few municipalities went bankrupt. Not dozens and dozens. But people sold their muni bonds. And then what happened to the money market? It actually went up because it doesn't go down. But a couple of money markets did during this time did from other companies. Two, just two from one company that made boneheaded maneuvers. So do you understand? Do you understand? This is going to happen to you. Now, it might not be like 2008, which is a bolt of a lightning out of the sky, right? Which is basically clobbered stocks within a 4-month period. They went down 56%. It might be 2000 to 2002, where it went down 50% almost, but it took 2.5 years. It was like water torture, you know, drip, 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 drip. Whereas this thing was 2008. But it's going to happen. And what do you do during those times?
Keep buying.
Just keep putting $50 a month away, $100 a month away. Do not panic. And I call it talk them off the ledge. Yeah. Talk them off the ledge talk. We've been here before. You know, we always have come back. And I don't usually say that we don't come back, doesn't matter. I said it to you because you're going to be your own investor. But yeah, and my wife, it was funny. She goes, "Are we doing okay?" "Yes, dear, everything's fine." What? 2008, 2009, yes. She says, "Everything, you okay, Frank? Everything's okay?" "Yes, dear, everything is just fine." So if you go on the website again, you will, because I'm going to ask you to do this. I'm going to ask you to go look at two funds. You can do more. And check out what company is interested. I'll tell you all 6 of those companies are good companies. 4 of them are awesome companies. I won't tell you which ones. You decide. Because that's the last thing I want to do is tell you what to buy. You know, in broad categories, yes. But I don't want to say, "Oh, Mr. Piano, this and that, so I'm this and that." You know, no. You're going to choose. And don't worry about it. As long as you choose companies that have been around for a long time. Did you see some of those companies? 1952, 1934, 1973. And they've survived this long, and they've done very well. You should do well. No guarantees. Questions, thoughts, ideas? Am I going too fast? Okay. All right, so let's burn through these last few. Okay. Automatic investment plans. What you've already said. When that organic matter hits the Ventolin device, when the world is going to end, just keep putting the $50, $100 a month away into your mutual fund through your paycheck, 401k, 403b, TSP, or bank account, credit union. Pay yourself first. Did you learn this in Business 121? Pay before you make that payment to Nike, before you make that payment to AT&T. Pay yourself first. In my humble opinion, this is the absolute best way to invest in a mutual fund. You do not worry whether or not it's a good time to invest. Every month is a great time to invest $50 that comes right out of your paycheck or checking account. And it is practically the only way many people ever invest. Some people say, well, you know, I want to wait till I get $5,000 or $10,000, then I'll start investing. What? When is $5,000 going to be sitting in your lap? You know, it's not going to happen. You're paying your bills. You're trying to stay, keep your head above water. Pay yourself first $50. And then what happens automatically is that the mutual fund will reinvest those dividends, those capital gains, those interest payments. They will buy more shares in the mutual fund. So you don't have to, that's the default. Unless you want them to send you a check, they don't send you a check anymore. They're going to do it electronically. If you ask for a check, they'll send it to you. But usually they want to set up some kind of automatic withdrawal plan. And so the automatic investment plan allows the investor to earn fully compounded rates of return. Unless the investor needs the income, it is always a good idea to reinvest dividends and capital gains received from mutual funds. By the way, automatic reinvestment of dividends, interest, and capital gains is the default when you open a new mutual fund. They will automatically do it unless you tell them otherwise. And unless you need the income, that's what you want to do. And then when you do need the income, you do a systematic withdrawal plan. Start taking the money out. They will automatically send it to your checking account monthly, quarterly, yearly. It's up to you. And then we talked about the conversion privilege, or sometimes called exchange privilege. You can set it up automatically so that as you get older, they automatically exchange the funds into more conservative investments. Or you can do it manually. So you don't have any fees from the mutual fund company, but you're going to trigger tax consequences if the money is not in a qualified account, retirement account, college savings account. But then again, we don't worry about the taxes. Purchase options. How do you buy them? Well, the closed-end ETFs, you have to go through the stock exchange. Remember, companies like Fidelity and Vanguard, if you open up an account with them, they'll let you buy their ETFs with no commissions. Open-end, you buy it through a broker, directly from the retirement, from the investment company. But the best way is through automatic contributions, in my humble opinion. And the same thing is true when you sell it. When you sell it, you sell the closed-end through the stock exchange, ETF through the stock exchange, open-end, call for your broker, call through the mutual fund company, go online. The best way is automatic withdrawal. Now, here, somebody asked about taxes. And again, we'll review this. We're going to talk about taxes throughout the semester. But taxes should not be our main concern. If you have income from dividends, they are taxed as income, but with a little sweetener. So 20% max, 15% typical, 5% minimum. Capital gains are taxed as capital gains. Again, 20% max, 15%, 5% minimum. They are reinvested dividends and capital gains are still taxable transactions. And you're going to get a 1099 at the end of the month that says you made $53.47 in capital gains or whatever. And you have to report that on your taxes. But again, if you're not making a whole lot of money, it's not going to be, the taxes are going to be very minimal. When they become serious taxes, congratulations. When you're paying serious amounts of taxes, I hope that all happens to all of you. And every once in a while, people say, wait a minute, my mutual fund went down this year and I still have to pay taxes on capital gains. And yes, sorry. So there's talk every once in a while of having unrealized capital gains. In other words, you didn't sell the mutual fund. The mutual fund sold some investments inside the mutual fund. They passed through the capital gains to you. Some have go to the Congress and say, we've got to set it up so that unrealized capital gains would not be taxed until you sell your mutual fund. It ain't going to happen. It would create the most, I mean, the tax code is already incredibly complex. This would be a nightmare to try to figure this out. And again, if it's in a retirement account, you don't worry about it until you go to retire. Then you get taxed as income, unless there's the Roth provision, in which case those taxes are free. Now, the prospectus. Are we going okay? I'm trying to burn through this because on Thursday, we've got a lot to do on Thursday, too, so get ready for the exam. So we want you to go to the annual report and the prospectus and take a look at them. And they're really useful, very useful. Why? Because if you ever have insomnia at night, start reading the fund prospectus and the annual report, and you'll go fast. Because they're written in that legalese that we see the lawyers write for us. But it's not that bad. So let's take a quick look. We've got a couple minutes. Let's do it. Okay, goes back here, not there, not there. So here we have the sample mutual fund that we looked at last week. I'll look at it again this week. And there's the full prospectus, all 32 pages of it. Let's just take a look at the summary prospectus. Doesn't that look inviting? Don't you going to read all that? Here's the important stuff down here. Oh, there's the scary part. Whoa, come on. There's the scary part. Come on. Yee. You may lose money. Oh, no, it's not there. Where's the money? Here. The fund's investment objective are to achieve long-term growth of capital and income. The table describes the fees and expenses that you may pay if you buy and hold the shares of the fund. And then you might also pay brokerage commissions or other fees on the F2 and F3 shares. You can qualify for sales discount. Isn't this really exciting stuff, folks? Wouldn't you want to read this at night to go to sleep? Yeah. Okay, this talks about there's all the fees, the portfolio turnover, the fund pays transaction costs. The portfolio's turnover was 36%. So I'm going to ask you to find the turnover, and you can do it. You got to do F, control F, look for turnover. But you'll be able to find it. And so isn't that exciting? Don't you want to go through all those? The fund primarily invests in common stocks, most of which have a history of paying dividends. The fund's equity investments are limited to securities of companies that are included on its eligible list. Securities are added to or deleted from the eligible list based upon a number of factors. Isn't this exciting? Yeah, I know. People don't read it. Do you think anybody actually reads the prospectus? Nobody. I did a long time ago. And I was working as a programmer for this small brokerage firm. And I was terrified of stocks. And the president, small company, only about four brokers, and the president was the guy who was hiring me. I would say, well, you know, Frank, his name was Frank. I'm frightened of stocks. You know, I understand that they're, you know, really good investments over the long term. Not ready. He used to bark at you. Not ready. Okay. So then his second in command, Joan, who could tell you horror stories about what it was like to be a woman in the investment world in the 1970s and 80s. What? Yeah, what was it like? And she said, well, let me show you this company. She showed me ICA and Washington Mutual Investors Fund. And I read the prospectus cover to cover. I glossed over the stupid stuff. And I came back and said, okay, can you show me the next one, the Washington Mutual Investors Fund? I want to read the prospectus for the Washington Mutual Investors Fund. And she looked at me. You read the prospectus? I said, yeah. I'm going to give my money to these people. You'd think I would want to know what the hell's going on. She looked at me and she goes, I don't know anybody's ever read a prospectus. I've never read a prospectus. Okay. All right. So read the prospectus and you can be an elite minority. How's that? And then the annual reports, where are they? Where is this guy? Go back. Then you'll see here, annual reports and prospectuses. So there are the six companies. There are dozens more. Don't limit yourself to these companies. You can go in there and look for the annual reports, the prospectuses, and you can use them for your assignment, one of the assignments for Chapter 4. Cool. Okay, quite back. All right, back to the return to the slideshow. Where's the mouse? Where's the mouse? Where'd the mouse go? The mouse is gone. Oh, darn. Okay, financial publications. Lipper and Morningstar are the two major companies that do research on mutual funds. They have subscription services, which they're going to try to get you to sign up for, but you can go on the internet and use them for free, what they give you, and it's good enough. Go to the library, and you can get Morningstar and Lipper for free, Business Week, Forbes, Kiplinger's, and they include these surveys. I'm not a big fan of these surveys because they only go back 10 years. I want to go back 20, 30, 50 years. I want to see how well you've done over that time period. That's me. Other people use the 10-year periods or whatever. So you decide whether you want to use those. But Morningstar and Lipper are actually pretty good resources. And then the mutual fund companies themselves. The mutual fund companies are, again, promoting education. In the late 90s, the mutual fund companies, they got a lot of money in their pockets. So they started building these beautiful websites, really great websites with lots of education. And then during the bear market, I don't know what happened. The SEC must have told them, hey, none of that. Stop that. You don't do that. Because they all disappeared. Now they're back again. And here are six great companies, folks. I'll tell you which ones if you're interested. And then if you're into statistics, there's the company I got the statistics from, ICA.org. So, oh, I apologize. I'm not trying to bore you, but what I am trying to do is give you the same feeling that people get when they do their own research about mutual funds. When they start scratching the surface, and then this deluge of information comes at them, and they get that deer in the headlights stare, and they don't know where to go from. They don't know where to start. And so that was intended. So please don't. I'm not trying to be. I'm not sadistic. I'm not trying to make you feel horrible. But I am trying to make you feel the same feeling that people feel when they are confronted with the decision of what mutual fund should I choose. What we're going to do when we come back is we're going to take a look at a single mutual fund. Now, we already looked at some of the results last week. Remember I told you I was going to throw that in front of you, get you excited about it because we get through some of the boring stuff. And we're going to see a mutual fund that's been around since 1934 that's done very well in good times and bad times. And so here's my advice for what it's worth. You pick a mutual fund that invests in high-quality stocks or bonds. Now, quality is a very difficult word to define. It's very difficult. Quality is in the eyes of the beholder. But you can usually see it. You know it when you see it. Is well-diversified across several industries and sectors of the economy. Has a long-term perspective and a manager, or better yet, a management team with many years of experience. What you don't want to do, in my humble opinion, is find a company that shuffles their managers. Fidelity was great for this. They would just shuffle their managers like a deck of cards, and if somebody did great, great. They got showered with love and attention and money, and if you didn't do well, get out of here. So most of the companies now are changing their way of doing business. They're now understanding that people need time, and they need to be, it used to be, hey, you're a crack kid out of Harvard or someplace. Here's $1 billion. Let's see what you can do, kid. And if they did great, fabulous. They did well, didn't do well, get out. Now the companies, this is what Capital did this, and Dodge and Cox and T. Rowe Price, they would join the team and have a little bit of money to start with. They'd watch what other people are doing, and then they give more and more money as their experience grew. Does that make sense? That's what I like. But that doesn't mean you shouldn't go with Mr. Will Danoff at Fidelity with the Contra Fund, because he is awesome. But he's getting old. What's going to happen when Mr. Will Danoff leaves? That's the thing that scares me. When you got somebody who's phenomenal, and then they decide it's time for retirement, or they die. And has been around for decades and performed well in good and bad markets. Don't tell me how well you've done in good markets. I ain't interested. Any idiot, your boy included, can do well in a good market. How well do you do when the organic matter hits the Ventolin device? Right? And that's what I want to see. So when we start on Thursday, we'll take a look at a sample mutual fund that's been around for 87, 86 years, and see if we think we would like to invest in something like that. Okay? Now, real quick, 2 minutes. I got 2 minutes. When's the exam? Next Tuesday. So you're going to contact me if you missed the exam, right? If you missed the exam, you're going to contact me. It will be a Scantron portion. All right, so bring a regular old Scantron, and then there will be a written portion. No calculations. No calcs. Okay, there's no calculations, but you're going to have to come up with some definitions and write some stuff that we'll talk to about that on Thursday, what you're going to write. You get one page of handwritten notes. Handwritten notes.
Okay.
Front and back. Okay, so you get 8.5. Don't bring it. Bring it. One page of handwritten front and back. And some people say, oh, he's so nice, he does that. No, I'm not trying to be nice. What I want you to do is organize your thoughts and the concepts and the terms and all that on a single sheet of paper. And if you do that, you will have done what a student should do. So we try to prime the pump, because they're going to let you do that at the university? Not likely, no. They're going to expect you to take notes, to make your own flashcards, whatever, outlining, whatever. So one page of front and back, handwritten notes. You don't need a calculator, but you will need a Scantron, written portion. Yeah. And just real quick, I do not try to trick you. I tell you right off the bat, I do not try to trick you. Unless it says, now this one's a little tricky, you know, be careful. But usually I try, if you're a baseball fan, I try to throw strikes. I don't try to throw changeup. I just try to throw strikes or curveball or anything. Unless I say, this is a curveball. Watch it. All right? So on Thursday, we'll finish up mutual funds. You guys are awesome. And, yeah. And who came? Somebody, if you came in late, come see me. And somebody else. Oh, yeah.
George.
Oh, George. Okay. Oh, George Navarro. I'm sorry. I'm sorry.